You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up, we'll learn about a new method being researched that might help reduce and potentially eradicate the proteins that cause chronic wasting disease in deer.
First, if you've watched science fiction movies and TV shows lately, or in the last 30 years or so for that matter, there's a good chance it painted a bleak image of the future.
You're going to be handmaids. You're going to serve God and your country.
You stay down by day, but at night you can move around. You still have to be careful because the HKs use infrared.
I volunteer! I volunteer as tribute.
I believe we have a volunteer.
Some dystopian visions of the future there from the world of science fiction, but the science fiction world isn't all gloom and doom. There are more positive visions of the future. And more planners and policymakers are trying to harness the power of science fiction by bringing together authors to create positive, realistic visions of the future.
Authors include big names like Elizabeth Baer, Bruce Starling, Neal Stephenson, Alistair Reynolds, Neil Gaiman, Margaret Atwood. The list goes on. Kevin Bankston joins us now for a look at the role of science fiction in creating a positive future. He is the director of New America's Open Technology Institute, and his piece on this topic is linked on the Central Time Facebook page. Kevin, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, Kevin, we heard a couple of examples there from Hunger Games to The Handmaid's Tale and the classics like 1984, all these negative views of the future. Are we in more of a dystopian frame of mind lately?
Somewhat, yes, if the bestseller lists are any indication. When the Trump inauguration happened, for example, George Orwell's surveillance and authoritarian dystopia in 1984 shot to the very top of Amazon's bestseller list, and that wasn't the only one. Aldous Huxley's Brave New World, Sinclair Lewis's It Can't Happen Here, both sort of painting these portraits of authoritarian futures, both hit the top 20 that week. And meanwhile, one of the visions of the future that you shared at the front, The Handmaid's Tale, based on the book by Margaret Atwood, now a show on Hulu, has been a big hit. And I think this points to the fact that people, to some extent, try to process difficult times by looking to fiction depicting difficult times. Sometimes they look to history. Sometimes they look to the future. And they also use dystopias to sort of figure out how to recognize things that we want to avoid. There was a really funny, I thought, sign at the Women's March in January that said, "The Handmaid's Tale is not an instruction manual." Mm. But in a way, it is, because it signposts the kinds of things that we want to avoid.
So you're not saying that Americans are more pessimistic about the state of the world necessarily, although they may be. You're saying that there can also be instructive things in these books, too.
Absolutely. But at the same time, we don't want to let the doom and gloom of The Handmaid's Tale or 1984 necessarily dictate what happens next. We also need to think about positive visions of the future, so we can think about what we want to reach for rather than just what we want to avoid. And that's what this new project that y'all mentioned, which is called the Science Fiction Advisory Council, which just launched a few weeks ago, is trying to do. And to just describe what that is briefly, there's an organization called XPRIZE, which is a nonprofit that basically programs prizes trying to get people to make exponential progress on an issue. And so, for example, they're best known for having a multi-million-dollar prize for the first private company that successfully put a, reusable suborbital spacecraft up in the air. But what they've done is they brought together all these science fiction writers and some filmmakers, and are going to be working with them to build scenarios for positive visions of the future, starting with a collection that they just posted online at the website seat14c.com. I'll explain why they called it that in a minute. That's going to sort of paint a bunch of different pictures of positive futures set in the year 2037. And they're going to meet with these sci-fi writers quarterly. And through the insights of these writers, who think about the future all the time, usually from a well-informed place when it comes to what is coming technically, they're going to use that information to figure out what some of their next contests should be. Like, what are the big, moonshot ideas they want to incentivize people to come up with in pursuit of these positive sci-fi futures that the writers are going to cook up for them?
And this isn't the only project doing this, trying to harness the power of science fiction. You were involved with one called the Hieroglyph Project, which also had science fiction authors creating positive visions. You write about others. There's a lot of this idea catching on out there.
Absolutely. I think the Hieroglyph Collection, organized by the folks at Arizona State University, came from Neal Stephenson, a big sci-fi writer, who's actually known for some pretty dark futures, coming out saying, I think that science fiction is failing people by only focusing on dystopia. We need to come up with more positive visions. Hieroglyph was a part of that. This new advisory council is a part of that. Oh, and I promised to explain why the website is called Seat 14C. It's being co-sponsored by ANA, the luxury Japanese airline. And so the conceit for the collection is you are on a flight from Tokyo to San Francisco in 2017, but then you are suddenly transported through a wormhole to 2037 and land in San Francisco in 2037. What does the world look like? And so you have all these science fiction writers writing about this future San Francisco from a variety of perspectives. And they also have invited readers to submit their own story, the story of the person in seat 14C, and the winner of that contest, the person who writes the best story, that is going to get published in the collection, and they'll also get a nice trip to Tokyo out of the deal.
Kevin Bengston is with us right now. He's director of New America's Open Technology Institute, and he's looking now at science fiction and the ways that it can influence the real world for the better. And Kevin, the real world has actually been a big influencer on some technology that started in science fiction, I should say, and made the jump to the real world. Can you give us some examples of that?
Sure. There's a really distinct feedback loop between science fiction and real technology, in part because so many people involved in technology are sci-fi nerds. And I say that as a proud sci-fi nerd myself, working in tech policy, in part based on the science fiction I read as a kid. But a few of the more common examples are Arthur C. Clarke, who wrote 2001. He actually came up with the idea of communication satellites in the 40s and then wrote about it in his fiction. A less famous sci-fi author named John Bruder predicted computer worms in the 70s. William Gibson, who wrote the cyberpunk classic Neuromancer, coined the term cyberspace. Star Trek, in addition to motivating an immeasurable number of people to pursue engineering careers, also was one of the inspirations for the first cell phone, based on the communicators in the show. And then there are even weirder stories, like, for example, the film War Games, which depicts young Matthew Broderick as a hacker who hacks into the computers that control nuclear weapons in the early 80s. That kind of inspired Congress to pass our first computer crime law, and it really freaked Reagan out. Apparently Ronald Reagan saw the movie and then went to the Joint Chiefs of Staff and said, can this happen? And they were like, kind of. Meanwhile, Congress is holding hearings on this issue on the Hill, literally opening hearings with clips from the movie War Games, which, was set in the present, but was definitely science fiction. It involved, an artificial intelligence that ran all the nuclear wargaming. And then there are things like, say, Steven Spielberg's Minority Report movie, based on the Philip K. Dick novel. What a lot of people remember from that is the user interface, the sort of gestural computer interface that Tom Cruise uses, and that has influenced not only real interface design, but also has been, now imitated in practically every sci-fi movie since.
So what's the benefit of, not just being inspired by an entertaining science fiction book or TV show or movie, but actually setting out as an exercise with some of the pros in the profession and trying to chart a course to a positive near-term future?
Because it helps you embody ideas in a narrative which makes it easier to really understand the implications of the technologies we're talking about. A good example of this is a project at the think tank, the Atlantic Council, which actually did a project around the future of war, commissioning short stories from sci-fi writers while also inviting short stories through a contest, often submitted by warfighters themselves, like people in the military trying to conceptualize the future of war. And there's just something about narrative that allows us to engage with new ideas in a constructive way. And science fiction does this better than anything else. Like, it is a genre of fiction that is exclusively built around the idea of grappling with the tensions and the promise and the peril of new technology and how it impacts society. You know, not to name any names, but there's actually a pretty serious, like there is a field of people who do this kind of sci-fi prototyping, writing scenarios about technologies for companies. You know, it's a job, like legit, like people actually write sci-fi for internal use at tech companies. And I was talking to one of these practitioners who wrote some stories about some of the negative uses of the AI technology that this one company was building. And when they presented these stories, these dark futures based on this company's technologies in the boardroom, you know, one of the engineers had to go home to process it. He'd never really thought about the negative implications of the cool stuff they were building. And so it really gives you a visceral grasp of what lived experience is going to be in the future with these technologies that a white paper or bullet point talking points are not going to give you.
Kevin Bankston is with us. He's director of New America's Open Technology Institute. We're talking about science fiction and the ways it can influence the real world, possibly for the better.
And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Is there a science fiction book or a movie or a TV show that you think paints a positive, inspiring picture of the future? And how do you see science fiction influencing the real world? Call us at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We're talking about science fiction's influence on the real world's future as a number of different groups are bringing science fiction writers on board to lay out positive visions for the years to come. Kevin Bankston is with us. He's director of New America's Open Technology Institute.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you ever read or watched something, science fiction, and thought, I want to live there? Or it would be cool if we could do that one thing, or we need to prevent this from happening in the real world. Do you think there's potential here to use science fiction to plot a course for our future? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And we'll take our first caller now. We've got Linda on the line in Gurnee, Illinois. Linda, hi.
Hi. This is really interesting and unique. The movie that I saw that I felt I was hoping it would make an impact is The Martian.
Mm-hmm.
And not that it provides you an optimistic view, but it's very relevant and timely because it shows in the not-too-distant future where we could be if we don't stop pummeling the environment. And it was really, I thought some of the sort of subtle things that they showed in the movie, such as somebody's farm field just catching fire just all on its own, was really, they're really good visuals. And I was hoping that it would really perk up some people that are still pummeling the environment.
Linda, thank you for that. And I'm trying to remember that scene for The Martian, or if she's thinking of Interstellar. I'm not sure. But some good lessons from both of those for sure. Kevin, it's fun to get into some of these examples. What do you think about what Linda was saying there?
Sure. I mean, yeah, I don't remember any environmental themes in The Martian. I do remember them in Interstellar. But The Martian is a great example of the kind of sci-fi that simply by being a ripping good yarn and not shying away from the science can inspire young people to actually get into science, to think about things like, I could go work for NASA. It also helps NASA inspire policymakers to continue to fund it. You know, and it's perhaps not a coincidence that you know, last year Congress approved a budget for NASA to do Mars missions. I think that putting that kind of work in an inspiring way in front of the public helps keep that hope alive of our future in space.
Linda, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Kevin, with technology now changing so quickly, it can feel like we're always following in the wake and dealing with the consequences after the fact. Could efforts like these, you know, having science fiction authors try to think things through at the outset, help us get a little further ahead about of the impacts of new technology?
Absolutely. I think science fiction can be a really great laboratory for testing out different approaches to how we're going to adapt to new technologies. Although I also don't want to, I also want to emphasize that looking to the past of science fiction can also be helpful. You know, for example, we're all grappling with what AI is going to do to our society. And it's a really complex, fraught issue. And so naturally, we're reaching for science fiction to help us conceptualize the threat and the promise. And yet, in part because not enough people read a lot of science fiction, we keep reaching to a few things that everybody mostly knows, those things being HAL 9000, the evil AI from 2001, Isaac Asimov's Three Laws of Robotics about how robots should behave and not hurt people, and one last one. I'll let you all guess this last one.
Frankenstein?
Skynet from Terminator.
Oh, Terminator. I even played a clip
earlier. The evil AI that kills all of humanity. And yet, there are countless brilliant science fiction authors who have tried to address questions of AI ethics in science fiction over the decades. We just haven't really deliberately tried to mine the good ideas out of all that old science fiction. And so if I had all the time and the money in the world, you know, one of the first things I do is hire some grad students to help, like, do a survey of science fiction's treatment of that topic and see what useful ideas we can get out of it beyond Skynet and Asimov's Three Laws.
And Kevin, just super briefly, because we've got some folks waiting to talk to you, what's changed that we're taking sci-fi writers and science fiction itself seriously today?
Well, you know, you tell me. We live in an era of drones and self-driving cars and supercomputers in our pockets that are also happen to be spying on us. Like, we are facing a level of exponential technological change unlike anything else in human history. And the only thing that is readily available to give us the cognitive tools to try and cope with that as a culture is science fiction.
Talking to Kevin Bankston from New America's Open Technology Institute, looking at efforts by science fiction authors and others to create positive visions as maybe roadmaps for humans' near-term future. I'll go back to our callers with Taj in Monona, Iowa. Taj, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What do you want to bring up?
Well, that lady was definitely talking about Interstellar with the crops and everything, but one point that I thought was really interesting, theoretically speaking, from that movie was the level of involvement of AI in agriculture. I'm living in Iowa, and, you know, we've got agriculture going on all around us and more automation, you know, self-guided tractors and everything. And that's definitely going to change the future of agriculture in America, I think, with the level of AI involvement and automation and the elimination of human involvement in the growing of our food crops.
Taj, thank you so much for bringing that up, Kevin. I've talked to farmers on this show, you know, and you think farming and rustic, and they're talking about drones and computerized moisture sensors and things like this. Technology is affecting us in ways that isn't readily apparent maybe to a lot of people who don't work in special fields.
Yeah, I mean, it's just another example of how I don't want to say no one is safe, because the technology brings a lot of benefits too, but, like, no one is immune to the massive changes that technology is bringing to practically every field of human endeavor, and farming is no different.
Taj, thanks a lot for that call, and we're going to go next to Diane in Galena, Illinois. Diane, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What did you want to bring up?
I was calling was on the movie probably that made a big impact in my life was a movie from the late 1990s. It was called Deep Impact. It was with Tia Leone.
Right.
Are you familiar with it?
I vaguely remember it. Kevin, do you remember that one?
Well, it came out the same year as Armageddon.
Armageddon, that's the one I remember.
They were both the sort of planet-killing asteroid movies.
Well, what I thought was, when looking back on it, do the countries around the world, do we have a plan, an actual plan of what were to happen if there was an asteroid that was that would explode over the world? And what decision is our government going to make and how to handle it?
Diane, thanks for bringing that up. And yeah, beyond sending Bruce Willis to blow it up, what do we do, Kevin?
I have a funny story regarding Armageddon, not Deep Impact, but Armageddon, which is there was a young man who was in college at the time and saw that movie, and he didn't know what he wanted to do with his life. And then he saw that movie, and the next day he enrolled in engineering to focus on how to make make humanity a multi-planet species so that if we ever lost this planet, we'd still survive. And now he's one of the VPs at Elon Musk's space startup, which I'm forgetting the name of it for the moment.
SpaceX, right?
Yes, SpaceX. And so that's someone who very directly was inspired by a movie similar to the one that the caller mentioned to go into literally building our future in space.
Kevin, I don't want to get out of this conversation talking about positive images in science fiction without talking a little more about Star Trek, one of the most seen bits of science fiction out there and noted for a lot of positive views of where humanity is going. Is that a starting point where today's writers could take inspiration in different directions?
Absolutely. I think a lot of people in the real world, putting aside writers, have taken inspiration from Star Trek in a wide variety of ways, especially a lot of people inspired to go into technology or go into working around space stuff. The problem with Star Trek is that exactly how its utopia worked was always very vague, but it was basically, you know, we have conquered need. You know, it's a post-scarcity society where everyone's needs are taken care of, and they've conquered war, and they sort of just resolved, you know, human conflict as a thing. I'm not sure how one does that, and Star Trek never quite painted a roadmap for that. But simply as an ideal, as a utopia, it's an inspiring one and a nice antidote to some of the darker features that can make you sort of despair for the future.
Well, Kevin, it's a brave new world. Thanks a lot for joining us.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
That was Kevin Bankston, director of New America's Open Technology Institute. His piece on science fiction and the real world future is linked on the Central Time Facebook page.
And you can share your favorite science fiction books, TV shows, and movies, ones that had a positive view of the future, something you saw was inspiring, or something more negative and frightening that you hope we can avoid as a species. Again, read Kevin's piece and share your favorite or most scary bits of science fiction over at the Central Time Facebook page.